Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Wednesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla. Band's back together as Cramer returns with David Faber here at Post 9 of the New York Stock Exchange. S&P's trying to snap a three-day losing streak amid a series of corporate misses today. U.S. Bancorp, ASML, Travelers, J.B. Hunt. Market's still digesting Powell's hawkish comments from Tuesday. A roadmap begins with the fight against inflation as the Fed chair says there's been a, quote, lack of further progress this year.
Plus, United is one of the biggest gainers on the S&P in the pre-market. This on the back of strong earnings. Airline also slashing its expected deliveries amidst Boeing's quality crisis. And Tesla is asking its shareholders to reinstate Elon Musk's $56 billion pay package. That was back in 2018. This after, of course, Delaware court voided that compensation earlier this year.
Let's begin with the markets as set to open higher after the Dow ended six straight sessions of declines. S&P, NASDAQ, Russell did extend their daily losing streaks to three. Yesterday, as you know, the Fed chair suggested that rates could remain higher for a longer period. Here's what he had to say about battling inflation.
More recent data show solid growth and continued strength in the labor market, but also a lack of further progress so far this year on returning to our 2% inflation goal. The recent data have clearly not given us greater confidence and instead indicate that it's likely to take longer than expected to achieve that confidence. That said, we think policy is well positioned to handle the risks that we face.
First off, Jim, welcome back.
Oh, thank
you. You're a sight for sore eyes.
Oh, thanks a lot. It was great doing a little fishing. You know what? I listen to this and I keep saying, all right, so we've all been saying this. And we've all been saying that he is pragmatic. We've all been saying that we have a problem with inflation. So when he verifies it, I don't think we can say, well, this is a sea change for the Fed. I think that the Fed has said over and over again that you have to have inflation go down, before, you know, at least for, he wanted several in a row. And David, I think if we act surprised, we're phonies. If we think it's a sea change, we're phonies.
Okay.
Because he's he's looking at the numbers like we are.
Yeah.
He said they have to have cooler numbers. They're not cooler numbers. He has to wait for cooler numbers. Do you think that that's like anything different from what a pragmatic person would do?
No, I'm not questioning. I'm not questioning the stance. No.
Okay.
Why are others?
Hey,
it seems
mate.
Pretty straightforward.
Hey,
and frankly, the market did not react.
No,
I mean, it already didn't. Seemed to have been getting positioned
I'm
for this
you.
Likelihood, right?
Right, because what's happened here is that when you get the verification, Carl, we get verification, what happens? I mean, I was watching the tape because I was ruining my vacation, and I kept thinking, okay, well, this is the chance for the people who don't know anything to react. It turned out there were a lot more people who knew than didn't know. So I just don't want to get into this thing. I don't want to get in the horse race of the Fed. The Fed has said, Jay Powell said, okay, look, we got to have some cooler numbers. So when we don't get cooler numbers and you have people still calling for three cuts, I mean, these are people who are saying, you know what? I've looked at the situation and I really think that the Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl against the Chiefs. I mean, what the hell do you know?
Yes.
What do you know?
The comment, Jim, that maybe was a surprise was his forecast for year-end PCE at 2.8. B of A's out today saying, actually, the base effects in for December, for example, aren't that favorable. And in their words, if we take him at his word, there's a real risk the Fed may not cut until March 2025 at the earliest.
I thought, oh, geez, well, I mean, like we have a mind melt here. I just actually just yellowed that because I said, well, that may be news. But again, please tell me, other than J.B. Hunt, who is cutting price, who is in trouble and has to let things come down. I don't see that. We have a president who's calling for a tripling of the Chinese tariff. One of the few things that's happened that's come down is steel. But, well, let's end that.
We'll talk about that in a bit. All right, let's just then come back to the broader market. So your thoughts are what at this point, given we have been digesting for some time the idea that there are certainly not going to be six, let alone perhaps three, let alone perhaps any rate cuts during the course of 2024?
Well, I think we need to get to the point where people don't think there are any, and then we get some good numbers.
Aren't we kind of getting close to that?
No.
Well, we're not.
We still have Blake Bullard, who's a really smart guy, last week was talking about three.
I don't know. I had a conversation with somebody this morning. He's like, we might get a hike and not a cut. I'm like, what?
If he had not said we're done, I think he would have hiked based on these numbers. But where he's getting now on these numbers?
Think if he had not said we're done, based on where we are, so if he'd never said we're done and just said we're data dependent all along, they'd be hiking now?
Well, the numbers are worse than when they said that.
Okay.
You have to take that. I mean, housing prices are at least affordable than they've been in ages. I mean, isn't housing one of the basic rights he's looking at? Now, look, I look through these numbers and I say they're not nearly as bad. I think if the numbers were tabulated by ServiceNow, by Salesforce, we would look at the numbers and we'd say to ourselves, wait a second, these are not that inflationary. But they're, you know, when you calculate the numbers as what was on the CPI, I think that you could easily make a case that the Fed should have raised one more time. I don't think that's wrong. It's just that what's happened, they're not getting the desired, desired effect. And I think, and the reason I say that is if you go through over Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs, they're finally, the window's open. People are now be able to make money. The private credit's going to be able to be good again. And, you know, that just says look out for more inflation.
Well, you even tweeted this morning, if you're looking at the banks, it's about the fees in an environment where IBs ascended.
Oh, yep. My God. I mean, they're all raving about how much more they're making off people. I mean, I couldn't believe that. As much as I love Charlie Sharp, That was a great quarter. He is making a huge amount on the fees. I think the stock should be at 60. But the fact is that they have all these new groups that are doing business, and that's smart. So it's not like the fees are like being charged $10 for whatever, now you're being charged $15. They just have more fee business because they brought in a lot more fee people. David, we want banks to get away from net interest, okay? That NII is a sucker game.
Yeah.
We want fees.
Right. Well, and to your point, in the institutional business, I mean, in the investment banking and as well for Wells Fargo, there were significant fee generations.
Yeah, Charlie did a great
what
job.
What analysts had anticipated. Bank of America yesterday got hit in part because of what you just discussed.
No.
Net interest income, net interest margin.
And USB this morning.
And we're still, J.P. Morgan is still dealing with the significant decline its stock had on Friday, Jim, which you also, I don't believe, were here for.
Well, it doesn't matter if I was here for it because it was very disturbing. It was between a barracuda and a kingfish. And by the way, I caught the barracuda, which is trash fish, the king we ate.
You throw it back, right?
No, there are locals who like barracuda.
Oh, okay.
There's no accounting for
taste. You don't let it escape.
No. I mean, you give it a headache,
It's not for the sport of it
all. No, right. But let's just go. Why don't we go back to J.P. Morgan?
Sure, Jim. Sure.
Since I read it in real time.
Yes.
And I said, okay, so we have a really good quarter, and then Jamie comes on. You know what? James, a little like Dr. Strangelove. I was waiting for no fighting in the war room. I mean, honest to God, he comes on and basically he just says, look, I don't know why you would ever buy my stock. The world is coming apart. Inflation's raging. Who knows what's going to happen? And I said to myself, wow, he's issuing a sell on J.P. Morgan. I'll try to get him to have a go to hold. I mean, honestly, if you listen to that, and I happen to respect Jamie, I think he's terrific, but he killed the stock.
Worst reaction to earnings in 23 years?
Well, if he had
it's a long time.
Yeah.
Let's say he had just decided to be with me on the boat. Stock would be at 190.
If he had just decided to come on the fishing trip.
He'd come on the fishing trip.
It all would have gone so much better for you and for everybody.
Stock could be at 198.
You know, Peter Sellers did play a lot of roles in that movie. So I just want to make sure.
Okay, there are some moments. That movie's very good.
Yes, it is. It's
Sterling Hayden, blacklisted. Mm. Not really, kind of semi because he talked, he testified. Mm. He was fabulous, too.
He was.
Remember the fluoride Coke machine?
Yes, of course.
But
I
do think that Jamie was a downer. I mean, he was just a downer.
Purity of essence. That was what it was.
I was with a group of people who are very sophisticated mates, don't call them.
Mates.
They're mates. And it was a punch-up.
I don't understand. They're sophisticated in the ways of the sea?
No, when I read
in their seafaring abilities as mates?
No.
Are they pirates?
Listen, mate. I'm now into that, too. It was very hard to ignore his burst in where he basically threw cold water on a stock called JP Morgan.
I see. Okay.
Do you disagree with that?
No. It has been an interesting earnings season for the big banks, Jim. We had JP Morgan, obviously, to your point, with some of that negative commentary to a certain extent from Jamie Dimon. Yesterday's earnings from Bank America, not well received. But then Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. Goldman Sachs, by the way. Again, we don't need to go over stuff we already discussed.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll keep an eye on the financials. I know, just because you're not here doesn't mean it didn't happen.
The world ended because I'm not here, and I've restarted the world.
Yeah.
Goldman Sachs.
It is your world.
Exactly. Perfect. Dave, thanks for that.
You're welcome.
David Solomon delivered the quarter we've wanted from Goldman for a long time. It was just a great fee-based quarter. Morgan Stanley, this Ted Pick, he came in hot. Now, you either felt that James Gorman had just tanked it so that he could come in hot, or you could just say, listen, when he's ebullient, about M&A and about IPOs, David, that's your world.
It is.
Welcome to it. See, I'm back in your world.
Back in my world. The M&A world, I would not share that ebullience.
But that's Ted Pick.
There is
said
a
that.
Level of business that will continue to get done, but it's not. And as we get closer to the election, I think certainly from the perspective of companies considering a large transformative deal, which we have seen very few, of course, harder and harder to get done.
Well, can I have a little comedy hour? Do you mind? Can we sneak comedy in?
Always.
And I ain't talking COMITY.
You're going to talk about your capri pants?
Well, no. The FTC apparently wants to block Tapestry buying Capri.
Yes.
Now, okay, so that's stupid. That's okay. You can use the word.
Yes.
I guess they're looking at the 0.7 increase in apparel over the course of the last year. But this is being blocked, I don't know, because of Jimmy Choo? Is Jimmy Choo the issue here, or is it Michael Kors?
I am not certain. I'm aware of what you're discussing, obviously, and that it has been yet another concern overall in the market in terms of the FTC again preparing
have to protect the price. The Jimmy Choo prices are going to go up? Is that what we're worried about now in America? That toe cleavage takes precedent over anything else? There we go.
They did get,
that's the FTC.
They did get EU antitrust approval.
Because it's really critical.
Yeah.
I mean, it's comical. I'm sorry. Man, I didn't go to law school for nothing.
You're away, and you just come back, and you've still got it all. You're all up,
bundle
about the FTC.
My major was antitrust, okay? Kind of major, just
really?
Kind of soft major, yes. But I was
in law school.
I was friendly with all the professors in antitrust. If they ever felt that the issue was, we've got to stop the price increase in shoes that give you great toe cleavage, we were talking mostly about Chevron. I mean, this is, well, let's just say it's comical. What this was when I saw it? I figured it's episode 11 of Curb.
We should point out on that deal, it is a $57 all-cash deal.
How great is it for it? And how great is it for Tapestry?
Stock is trading, as you might expect.
Tapestry is up because it was a stupid deal and the next quarter was bad. But, David, all I can tell you is that Michael Kors must be preserved.
Got it.
If you had gone into law, you would have been in antitrust, you think?
Absolutely. That's my specialty because I made a killing on the SoCal deal. Professor Rita told me that deal will pass. I took everything I had and I bought calls. It was legal. Bingo. Paid for last year law school.
Well,
so let me tell you.
Well done.
That's kind of how it all began.
It was
how it all started.
He said, I think the deal passes. He was the professor, the best guy in antitrust. Bless his soul, I think he would be shocked that they brought this case.
Yeah. When we come back, a lot more on what's driving the morning. Best performing stock on the S&P. We'll talk about that. Some of these misses in Travelers, ASML, J.B. Hunt got some price target cuts on Tesla and other calls on Urban, GE Vernova, Elf, and Danaher. When we come back. United's up sharply in the pre-market. The airline posts a quarterly beat due to some strong travel demand. Company also slashing its expected aircraft deliveries for the year amid Boeing's quality crisis. This is what CEO Scott Kirby had to say earlier this morning on Squawk.
There are challenges in the industry, the capacity limitations, particularly the suppliers. It is pretty remarkable. We started the year with this kind of bow wave of aircraft deliveries. It's supposed to be 183. We actually knew we wouldn't get all of those, and so we planned for 101. We're now planning for 61. The biggest impact of that really is on our cost structure. We hired you know, enough employees to fly 101 airplanes, and we're going to be carrying that, you know, as we go through the summer. It'll catch up within a few months, but we're carrying that during the summer.
So that's interesting. They're going to try to make up for some of that by leasing some used Airbuses, Jim.
Yeah, look, this continues the fiasco of Boeing. He was very calm about it. I expected that he might have been more agitated, but he did a great job. This is a terrific quarter. We always wonder why every plane is an extremely full flight. And David, one of the reasons why every plane is an extremely full flight is because Boeing is not delivering the planes that they thought. When was the last time you've flown where there was a seat?
It's rare, it seems, that there are many empty seats on a plane. So that's been the case for some period of time since the end of the pandemic, certainly, Jim. But you really believe that it's simply capacity constrained?
Yes.
For the industry, to the point where they're missing out on potential revenue opportunities?
Well, I mean, look, their numbers on the PRASM, so the passenger revenue seat miles, are excellent. But I think the fact is that you would like to fly. Let's say you had a route structure to San Francisco. Well, I think you could easily do four more flights, and they'd all be full since nobody can get on them anyway. And I think that what's happened is that they would just insert on all the, on any of the runs that right now we all know are extremely profitable because we look at the bill and we can't believe it.
Right. Right.
And there would be more competition. I mean, now that you have FTC worried about something that's impossible. The two things that have happened here is how did seat prices go up so much? I'd like to look at that. Right. I mean, don't you think that's.
Yeah. Do you have
and then insurance.
Do you have an entrant in the Boeing CEO sweepstakes at all? Larry Culp, Dave Gitlin.
Larry Culp off. David Gitlin's working on a very big merger. Take him off. Take Judy Marks off. Judy Marks would be good. I don't know. I'll get to that Time 100 event and I'll pick someone.
Are you going?
Yeah.
I would imagine so. Hang out with Mahomes and who else? Zuck?
Mahomie. Oh, yeah. He's all over me. What? I'm going, okay? Hey, like, wow.
I didn't say anything.
It's a great event.
Yeah. It's a,
which event?
That's the first time.
Yeah, we'll talk more about some of the corporate leaders that are on the list this year. We'll get Cramer's Mad Dash, countdown to the opening bell. One more look at futures. This has been the pattern here where the pre-market starts strong. We'll see if it holds as we're trying to snap this three-day loss. Don't go away.
All right, let's get to a mad dash. Of course, we've got an opening bell about six or so minutes from now. You know, we haven't talked Lilly quite that much.
No, we haven't.
And we got to talk about it today.
Right.
Because of the latest potential indication for a drug that seemingly can do anything.
This is, well, it does. I mean, if you're overweight, there's a lot of things that can happen. Now, this is an overweight study for sleep apnea. These are people, non-diabetics, obese patients. Now, get this, David. The placebo, I think you might have been on the placebo, which is they did 4.8%. But Eli Lilly did, this is events per hour, 27.4. And then, you know, some of these numbers, I think the insurance companies have to take notice. The reduction from the baseline in line with 50 to 60% drop.
In events of sleep,
no, that is actually
of what?
Sleep apnea PhD data in line expectations. This is to be able to stop it.
To stop sleep apnea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to tell you, what this is, the reason why I bring it up is not sleep apnea necessarily. It's the growing drumbeat to the insurance companies that you better approve of this. When you have a demonstrated significant benefit, thank you, Lurink, in improving severity of obstructive sleep apnea, also known as OSA, then you know, this is really amazing.
Add it to the list, right? Obviously, the reduction, significant reduction in weight is the key, but it's also potentially positive for preventing future heart attack and or even stroke.
Stroke. It's 62.8% for
sleep. You talked about what it may mean for certain addictions as well.
Well, they don't want
which
that.
Is not
they,
yet on.
They don't want to do it because they think that there's other reasons why people are addicted. So they do fatty liver.
Right.
And fatty liver, it's been remarkable. That's a death sentence. Okay.
So, but you know what? I mean, it's been one of the great moves in the stock in a long time. So there it is. Look at that.
What? So it's not
more to go?
Yes, as each trial comes in. Fatty liver is millions of people. Million. And the Mets have won how many straight?
The Mets have won 9 of the last 12.
Okay, good. Now you're a happy guy, all right, mate?
I am. But we got to go. Okay, we got to go. We'll be right back.
Time's out with its annual list of the 100 most influential people in the world. This year's business leaders include Nadella, Mark Cuban, Larry Ellison, and NVIDIA's Jensen Huang, with Meta founder Mark Zuckerberg, the guest contributor, writing about him. He says, quote, while most of the industry focused on making mobile devices, he recognized that delivering the most powerful chips would unlock the next wave of innovation. Today, most AI models, everything from large language models to systems for autonomous driving to applications in science and healthcare, are trained on NVIDIA hardware. You can trace this innovation back to NVIDIA being in a position to design modern GPUs and deliver them at scale. It's a remarkable testament to Jensen's ability to evolve and execute. This is going out to a broad audience, Jim, much broader than ours.
Right, and let's make it clear, they are now friends. They weren't always, but Jensen can win over pretty much anyone, as we know from the New York article, which was the best I've read. I would emphasize that there's a horse, a foe horse race. There's a belief, like the other day, there was an article that said Zuckerberg has a Indian destroyer. I mean, they can't. Meta would take every chip, every Blackwell supercomputer. What's happening is that they're all making Alphabet, Microsoft, they're all making chips in conjunction with NVIDIA, and NVIDIA is actually helping them because NVIDIA knows they can't produce enough and wants to appease these clients. So this whole idea of Zuckerberg making an NVIDIA killer, well, just read that. That's not the statement of someone who's declared war against NVIDIA, is it? They like each other. I mean, geez, it's okay.
Opening bell at the big board today, education through music, providing music education to under-resourced schools. And at the NASDAQ, it's the New York chapter of The Lynx, a women's volunteer organization focused on African-Americans. Jim, it's a nice segue into what ASML said about Q1 bookings and full-year sales.
Yeah, they did keep their numbers, which I found surprising, given the fact that this was even much worse of a drop than people thought. I thought instantly that people would say, okay, ASMLF, they make the biggest machines, you have to have them. They didn't have the orders that we thought, therefore NVIDIA's weaker. It did not happen. Now, just so we know, this is really about Taiwan Semi. Taiwan Semi didn't order a lot, so it could be about Samsung too. But Taiwan Semi's up, and that's NVIDIA's play. So anyone who thought that was the case, and there's real volume with Taiwan Semi, is just saying, okay, look, this is, even though Taiwan orders were down, don't just believe it's some sort of interregnum, and the numbers will come back, or else ASM would not have stuck by its forecast. ASM makes these giant machines. They're as big as buses. Our government doesn't like them going to China because they make they're for the most sophisticated, so therefore people think it's all NVIDIA. But I feel with Taiwan Semi up, what that says is Taiwan Semi doesn't need them right now, but they will when they need them, fine.
Right. Speaking of China, we have, and you briefly mentioned the president speaking to the steel workers in Pittsburgh today. He's going to call, we think, for a tripling in tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum. Obviously, an effort to shore up support in Pennsylvania and Ohio.
Right. Now, let's go over what he said versus what should have happened here. One of the great things, one of the few things that has come down under Biden, and it really doesn't have a lot to do with Biden, but I'm sure if you're from the other party, you think that, is hot rolled steel. $318 for the increment that you worry about in March of 2 years ago, and now it's down to $291. Cold rolled $493 down to $396. Aluminum $3,298 down to $2,559. Rebar down substantially. That's the what you would use if you're building a building. So the one of the things that's really happened is that the prices have gone down, even though David's counterintuitive because we would think the tariffs. The Chinese would do it. But this is one of the things, this is score one for Powell, but no.
Yeah.
The president wants to make it.
But it's also more performative than anything else. I mean, it's more for show, Jim.
More for show.
Chinese imports are incredibly small.
Right. Even through Mexico.
They just don't account for much of anything in terms of steel being consumed in this country.
They gave up.
And so, to your point, it's more for show. I would note as well that as part of today's announcements, there was another mention made of U.S. steel,
right,
which, of course, as you well know, I followed closely in terms of Nippon Steel's $55 a share deal to acquire the company. But Here's the press release. Here's what the president or what they're saying. Iconic American Steel Company, vital for it to remain an American steel company that is domestically owned and operated. That would continue to seem to say, Nippon, you're not going to be able to own this.
There was a time.
Now, CFIUS is the only way, potentially, through which they can really effectuate that occurrence, because there wouldn't appear to be any others. This obviously is Japan, our significant ally, Nippon, which has agreed to invest in the assets here in the U.S., but has run afoul so far of the unions.
Well, not since Hyman Roth do we think that U.S. Steel is a big company.
True.
Right?
True. But it has certainly been one that's been a focus because, of course, as you see, if in fact this were to change direction and or you were to see the U.S. And the president back off in terms of its seeming opposition to said transaction, you got a lot of stock, a lot of points you can make up very quickly here.
Oh,
40
yeah.
to 55.
Right. So
this thing will be out there probably till the election.
What are the arms thinking?
Who knows? A lot of them are just, wait till the election and see if things change, although Trump has said similar, if not even more draconian things when it comes to this. Again, I come back to the fact this is not a Chinese company. This is Nippon, a Japanese company that is considered a great ally that was
ally.
Just visiting the White House, the Prime Minister, which was just visiting the last week.
If there weren't a commitment to keep it basically unionized, then I could understand. From the president's a union president. He said that
He has, and he's gotten the support of that steelworkers union. That said, Cleveland Cliffs has been incredibly effective, as we said many times, in terms of galvanizing the opposition to the transaction.
Right.
Even though they would not necessarily appear to be a potential buyer overall, given their own real antitrust concerns. Anyway, just wanted to mention that was part of the announcement on the Chinese tariffs.
It was, you could argue, Carl, that the Chinese wiped out U.S. Steel effectively. It's only a $9 billion company. I would say that a non-union company, Nucor, took a ton of business from them. And Nucor is a fantastic operator, the best in the world, the lowest cost, and U.S. Steel is historically a high cost. How this became a battleground is beyond me, given the fact that there really isn't anything that would say that they would be hurt. But then again, I mean, look, the regulatory authorities are fighting the Kroger Albertsons, even though they've committed to being union. So I don't know what they want other than to be able to make a show. They're putting on a show. It's Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland here.
It kind of goes with election years, Jim. There's a lot of show. There's
it's
a lot
an
of show.
Election year.
Yes, it is.
How poignant.
Yes. There's a lot going on with an election year.
What else?
We're just
Paramount?
Getting started.
They care about Paramount the election?
I don't know. We'll get to that in a little bit. How about LVMH? Can we talk a bit
Godfather's Paramount.
One of the big luxury providers of all sorts of goods. I'm trying to actually see where the stock is. It looked up.
It was up.
It was a 3% organic revenue growth quarter for the company, 20.7 billion euros. There it is, up almost 5%. You see it right there.
And yet the headlines were that it was a bad quarter. I mean, give me a break.
You know, a number of the analysts weighing in. Well, let's see. B of A, worst is now behind us, as expected. Luxury sector going through a temporary period of normalization, they say, following above-trend post-COVID demand. And this was confirmed by the first quarter result group from LVMH. But not worse than any worse than was expected. In fact, sort of in line in terms of that organic revenue number. And the stock has pulled back. You see it right there. The end of that chart, about 10%. So, again, better perhaps at least than the market had been setting up for in some way, Jim.
Right.
Overall, good enough is the Morgan Stanley note on it as well. So generally not raising more concerns about previous weakness in the luxury market.
I'm wondering if there's a read-through to some of the companies that have been crushed by shortfall in China.
Mm-hmm.
Nike. Apple.
Right.
Maybe. Now, where Tim Cook is?
He's in Indonesia
Indonesia.
Yeah.
I think he's putting together a coalition of the countries that have, say, 200 million people that are great markets instead of the colossus that is China that is no longer a great market. And I think it's something to watch.
Yep.
So you put a factory in a place because you want business. Indonesia is a huge country. People don't understand how big Indonesia is. They're China. Apple's crushing it in Indonesia.
He's in Jakarta today. I was in Hanoi last couple of days talking about commitments to suppliers there. Musk is expected to go to Delhi in a little bit, where sources tell, I think, Reuters today that could be another $3 billion investment. Take a listen to what Cook said about some of these countries ex-China.
We talked about the president's desire to see manufacturing in the country, and it's something that we will look at. I think the investment ability in Indonesia is endless. I think that there's a lot of great places to invest, and we're investing. We believe in the country.
So are you looking at a giant supply chain hedge?
Not just yes, but also I think that what he's saying is we recognize that you are a huge country, and we are number one in your country. I mean, look, Brazil has 215 million people. They number one in Brazil. These countries, if you add up five of them, and their growth is so much faster than China, I think we have to start thinking that there's a mosaic of business where we're going to say, you know what? All these analysts who are just totally focused on China will not see what's happening in these other countries where there's a commitment. It's almost like there's a Belt and Road Initiative by China, and wherever they go, they give money, and suddenly there's a lot of business with China. He's doing an Apple Belt and Road, and I think it makes all the sense in the world because these other countries count. We're so China-centric, we don't realize that there are a lot of people in Indonesia. David, there's a lot of people in Brazil. That's why the Eagles' first game is being played there.
Is it really?
Yeah, Friday night game. I think we have it.
In Brazil? Did you just
say? Sao Paulo.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I wasn't informed. Now I am. Thank you.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, I had no idea.
Oh, really? Okay.
No idea.
No,
missed that one. I don't follow the Eagles.
Well, no, it's more of a
nor do
NFL.
I follow the band either, frankly.
We're more of an NFL. There's a lawsuit involved in Glenn Frey right there.
Not the Eagles, man.
Yeah, there's a lawsuit. Brian, there's a lawsuit right now. I mean.
Anyhow.
Brazil's got 215 million people.
Yes, Brazil. Yeah, and Indonesia's got 200 million people also.
Yeah, so yeah. You put together this mosaic of places, and they equal China, and 5 years from now, they will exceed China. It's a mosaic play.
Got it. I want to hit Tesla, guys, because we mentioned it at the outset. They obviously, on Squawk Box, they covered in depth sort of the move by the company to put it all to a vote. That is all being that enormous compensation package for CEO Elon Musk that was agreed to by the same shareholders, or at least the shareholder base at the time, back when it was voted on 2018. But a Delaware court said, no, we're not, it wasn't arrived at properly in terms of some of the influence of board members and the like. So they're putting it back to them. And high likelihood would be they'll approve it. It was all stock-based comp, of course, based on what at the time seemed like incredibly difficult to reach targets that were reached for the said stock price. Lately, though, if you have any targets that involve the stock going up, Jim, they aren't being hit. This thing's down 37.5% for the year, as we pointed out yesterday, falling below that $500 billion market value for the first time in quite some time, and right near a 52-week low.
No, it is a stunning decline. You know, obviously, we could pick on Cathie Wood for coming on and saying it's the greatest. There are price targets of like $25, $27. I think that's a little facetious. But, David, Cybertruck, I know, I caught you saying you saw one.
I did. But one bombing down Broadway the other day really catches your eye. I will
right.
say that.
Well, that's wow. Yeah, I mean that's what it does. But apparently, it's harder to make than we think. We know that. It's not commercial. It's not a commercial thing. It's a boutique thing.
Would they have been better off focusing on a lower end or lower priced car as opposed to the Cybertruck?
That's where I'm going. That's what they needed.
Well, this is fascinating note out of Barclays today. They cut to 180, reiterate equal weight. They think the quarter's going to have a gross margin miss and a headline miss and maybe negative free cash flow. But, Jim, the biggest issue is what they're calling this binary bet. Do you go low-cost car or do you go full autonomy? We are hard-pressed to think of any other precedent of a company of Tesla's size basing its path of success on such binary bets.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, look, do you want to sell it down here? I don't know. If they suddenly, he's capable of issuing any press release that could indicate that he's got a car that we don't know about.
Yeah.
But trying to claim the middle CG. That was a good piece I read. That was Canaccord. Key themes, mega binary. That was the Barclays that was poured. I mean, every day that there's something, and it all starts reading like pornography. I mean, it's prurient, right? Like, we don't need to read this stuff. I mean, enough already. It's obviously going to be a bad quarter. The free cash flow is bad. That's not what was in the cards. We didn't think that EV would suddenly become something that a pariah.
No, I wouldn't call it that either.
Why not?
But obviously the focus the company wants is out a bit towards things like the robotaxi, towards the new entrants that they will have in the market as they combat really the Chinese EV makers in particular,
but overall
waning growth a bit.
That's kind of the point of the Times piece yesterday, David Gelis's piece called "Has Tesla Peaked?" that argues it's not about all EVs slowing, Jim. It's more about Tesla getting separated from the market.
Well, I think that Tesla didn't have a new model. I mean, in the end, it is a car company. And, you know, you got to refresh. I mean, if we had, let's say if Farley were sitting over there, which I wish he were for time.
He said this in a sense.
Yes. I mean, Farley's just over and over again saying, you got to have something fresh, something new.
Yeah.
The F-150's killing the Cybertruck.
Yep. Guys, it's the 35th anniversary of CNBC. And I hope you know that.
Are you going to ring the bell this afternoon?
No, I don't think I'll be here for that. But I do remember 30 years ago when I was a fledgling reporter
30 years
here.
Ago, you were 30.
Thank you. The first story that I covered in depth was the fight for Paramount. And here I am again doing it all over.
Then it was Sumner
Redstone and Barry Diller. Of course, Redstone prevailed at Viacom, buying it for $10 billion, by the way. Value above the current market value for Paramount, which, of course, also includes CBS at this point, as well as Viacom, which became a far larger company. Why am I mentioning it? Because here we are again. And I have to admit, I find it fascinating yet again. Let me give you a quick update, because we have been covering it for some time. First of all, this period of exclusivity that the Ellison camp, Skydance, Redbird, KKR, also a part of that, are in right now in terms of negotiating with the special committee of the board. That is going to end, let's call it early May, May 3rd. They're not going to have a deal done by then. I don't believe the market expected that would be the case, but certainly worth mentioning. Every indication I get from people on all sides is it's going to take more time than that. They are negotiating in full right now. There are obviously, as you might expect, conversations between the advisors to the special committee and the Skydance camp as well. But it's going to take more time than that, and it may be more twists and turns from here. You've got a special committee that has its hands full in terms of trying to determine how to deliver value and or what the value really is for the B shareholders here. And it's not just determining the value of Skydance, remember, because the transaction that is currently contemplated both pays a premium for National Amusements, the control shareholder, but also involves Paramount coming up with an exchange ratio to buy the Skydance studio and bring it in and merge it with Paramount Studio. And then, as I pointed out many times, in addition, the issuance of new shares, many of which would be purchased by Larry Ellison, for example, and other members of the Skydance group, Redbird, KKR. Special committee's got to decide a lot of different things. What's Skydance worth? It's a private company. You can't necessarily just do it on where they last raised capital. It's not the easiest thing to determine. It's, of course, something they will be able to, but it may take time. You've got to figure out what the status quo would mean for Paramount. It's not just, okay, if we do this deal, how would it work out? But what does the status quo look like if we do nothing and Paramount stays out there as a fairly highly levered company and a challenged business? What happens to the stock price? You've got to deal with the control shareholder and Sherry Redstone. And you've got to make sure that, in fact, the numbers you're hearing from the Skydance group in terms of synergy, really cost cutting, and I want to make it clear here in terms of previous reports, are real. I've reported on synergies that could be as high as $3 billion. What I really should have said and what should have been communicated more clearly was that's mostly cost cutting. The actual revenue synergies are small, $200 million perhaps. The potential for significant cost cuts, that is major. Floor of $1 billion is what I'm hearing, to as high as $3 billion from any number of areas. Whether you're talking about the Nielsen contract, the fact that the window in Paramount Movies to Paramount Plus, where it is, so many different areas, at least, that they believe, Jim, there would be significant ability to cut costs. So a lot to go here. And then there will be the question as to what happens at the sort of towards the end of the negotiating. My expectation in some ways is this special committee is going to look for some sort of compensation for the B shareholders beyond the prospects of a company that will be able to grow, will be delevered to a certain extent, will be larger and be able to deliver more free cash flow. But will they want them to deliver something in the near term in some way in terms of value? Maybe it's an enhanced stock buyback. I don't know what it would be, but I think there's got to be an expectation this thing's got one more turn before they finally figure out whether they can get there or not.
Do they ever talk about the incredible presence that Paramount has in live sports? I mean, for instance, if you want to watch international football, they're the one.
Yeah.
And I think that's worth a fortune to anyone, including our network. Now, of course, if they're going to block the Capri Tapestry deal, they won't let that happen.
The relationship with the likes of the NFL is important in other sports. And Redbird,
golf,
by the way, one
basketball?
Of the partners here, has got very important partnerships overall with the likes of the NFL. Like, certainly
they can close everything except for the sports, and it would be an incredibly attractive property.
Yeah. Carl, that's the update for today. 30 years after, of course, we reported on the battle for Paramount.
Yeah. And don't forget, CNBC is going to ring the closing bell to celebrate 35 years today. As we go to break, not a lot of data or Fed speak today, although Mester and Bowman later on tonight. Big events will be the 20-year bond auction at 1 o'clock, and also Beige Book at 2 p.m. might be interesting, 10-year 4.62. Don't go away. Watch the airlines today. Wow, near 12% pop in UAL as they raise their guidance, even as they cut their Q1 aircraft delivery forecast. Also helping some shares of American, both United and American, the number one and two S&P gainers at the moment, as we're back to 50-67. Don't go anywhere.
Okay, we're looking at small and medium-sized banks. We have First Horizon, which is a very bank. Brian Jordan's going to be on, and I think he can this is 4% yielder. It was once capable of, I thought, going out at $25 because there was a bid from a Canadian bank. It did not go through. It was blocked. And he's just a straight shooter. He'll tell us how the Southeast is doing. We need to know. I think we're all looking for stuff that's going down so that the Fed has an easier job. It's not the president. He's not helping the situation.
Well, we're just back. We're just glad we got you back because earnings season without you is tough.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be back. And I know, David, you're glad to see me.
Excuse me. Sorry. So happy. Are you kidding?
Thanks, mate.
I know. I'm so happy you had fun with your mates.
Yeah, well, I was with a lot of mates.
Yeah. Just trying to make Carl and I jealous. Got other mates.
Oh, there you go. See, that's what it's like to be living the dream, David.
That's like that, that's right here at the desk. That's what that is.
You look exhausted.
Oh, yeah. It's just I have to do the triathlon. He's just open.
Mad Money, 6 p.m. Eastern time. You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
All opinions expressed by the Squawk on the Street participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information Squawk on the Street participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Squawk on the Street disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Squawk on the Street disclaimer.